Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way.
Today on Home But Not Alone, we're going to have another chat about the coronavirus. Specifically, we're going to talk about our response to the pandemic and the current events and how vital it is to hold on to hope during these difficult times. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. So, oh my gosh, my desk is clean now and I was just looking for whiteout and I don't think I have whiteout. I think it's because either it got thrown away while I was cleaning things up or because it's not 1997 anymore and nobody has whiteout. But do you have whiteout at your house?
I use the whiteout tape. Have you ever heard of that?
I haven't.
It's like a little roller and it has the tape. It's so nice and neat. It's perfect. You have to look it up. It's way more expensive than just like the liquid whiteout though.
Oh, I've used some. I'm not good at it, though, because I grew up in the 90s where you were trying to white out your little answers on the paper. You're just like, God, I barely changed this little thing. And then you did it with the tiny brush, and then it got all crusty because you left it open.
Right, right. Well, the downfall of the whiteout tape is that my kids always pull on the dispenser, and then the whole thing is ruined, and it's... ends up in the garbage anyways.
These are the types of thoughts we have normally, not when we're just confined. So I don't know why. That's anyway. So I wanted to dive right into this. So I want to bring up the other day in prayer, I found myself really reflecting on the agony in the garden. And it's actually my favorite mystery of the rosary is the agony in the garden. Second is the wedding at Cana. But I think... the garden is where a lot of people are right now. We're on our knees. We're asking God. We're saying, please let this cup pass me, pass over us. We're scared. And you know what? It's okay to be scared. I think some of us have come to the realization, okay, yeah, this cup is not going to pass over us. We have bad things coming. We are already in the midst of bad things. We are going to suffer in different ways because of this. And maybe these places of being scared. I mean, remember, Christ was sweating out blood out of pure agony. So maybe you're in the position of being scared. Maybe you are accepting that this is going to happen, but you're still scared of what's coming or what is happening in the moment. And that's okay. Christ wants to meet you in that place. But we can't stay in that place forever. Even though the agony in the garden is followed by the scourging at the pillar, the crowning of thorns, and even the carrying of the cross and the crucifixion itself, after all of this comes the resurrection. So while we don't want to dismiss what anyone is struggling with, this is a global crisis, but it's also a crisis for many, many individuals. We also want to make sure that we look forward to the glory that is to come.
And that's why we picked the title Raising Up the Post-COVID Church, because a lot of us are, like you said, living in that fear right now. But I think that it is vital to, you know, really be intentional about the way that we're reacting to the fear, about embracing our cross and the way that we're going to get through this and continue, like you said, to look forward to the resurrection. You know, hold on to that hope because Christ is going to raise us up out of this. Jesus can bring good out of all things. And I think we need to hold on to that. So I think that the way that we react to the coronavirus and to this fear that we're having is going to shape the future of the church. So this is a vital time for us and for our families. If we want to raise good, virtuous Catholics, then we need to be good, virtuous Catholics, especially in the difficult times. So raising up the post-COVID church, we want to talk about going from the cross to the resurrection and how a little bit how that impacts raising our kids in this time, too. So what did you want to start with leading us in, Tim?
So I want to talk for a minute about the obedience, about the virtue. Is it a virtue, obedience? Does it fall under that?
Okay. Sure.
You're the virtue expert. I should know, you know, but I forget these things. So the virtue of obedience, see, here's the thing. Ever since this crisis began, I've seen a lot of Catholics tearing into each other. I've seen a lot of Catholics arguing against the bishops and doing so in a way that's real gossipy, here's the thing. What the bishops have done, say, like suspending public mass, is within their authority. That's just what it is. It's within their authority. Now, there are people saying that they shouldn't have suspended mass for a variety of reasons. What's driving me nuts is when I hear people say, well, but now there are people who will say, well, I don't really need to go to mass. And then when this crisis is over, they won't come back. Here's the thing. I heard someone say recently, this is going to make people who are strong in the faith stronger and people who are lukewarm more lukewarm. Mm. And that happens with a lot of things in life, though.
Yes.
That happens with, say, the abuse scandal. There are people yes. who are like, I have to love on this church even more. And then there are others who are like, well, I mean, if this is what's going on, maybe I even have to be less interested. So to say, well, the bishops shouldn't have suspended public mass because there might be a negative implication about some people might not return, that's not prudent. That's making decisions. People keep saying, oh, faith, not fear. But it's okay to have some fear. I saw, you know, a religious sister talking about this the other day, that Christ himself feared the pain of the cross, feared yes. the death that came. And that didn't mean that he didn't embrace it. It's okay to be scared of things. It's okay to have that natural fear. But to say, well, faith over fear, and therefore throw out prudence entirely, that's a problem. So I'm hoping, and I don't know, but I'm hoping that people will learn from this and learn to say, you know, the shepherds may not always be right, but I need to understand a little bit more about obedience. I heard a priest say recently that when he took his vows, people think, oh, chastity. He's like, I've spent a lot of years not engaging in certain activities. That's not difficult. Now, all of a sudden, I have to obey everything that's being told to me instruction-wise. Like, this is... That's so much more difficult. And I thought, yeah, we really disregard a lot in our modern culture, obedience.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know. Some people say, oh, this is illness is a punishment from God. Or I've literally heard someone say, well, the Bible says that the bishops are going to turn on us toward the end time. All right. I'm sick of that nonsense. I'm sick of all that doom and gloom. You know, oh, this is always, everybody thinks it's the apocalypse and has for 2000 years. It's, you know, it's
right.
Not,
right.
We
right.
don't know when the end time is coming. And I doubt it's now. But regardless of what's happening right now, whether or not this illness is some sort of punishment or whether it's not or whether it's whatever, I really believe that because of this, a lot of people are going to come to understand virtues like obedience.
And yeah.
This will strengthen the church. It's like the whole planet is on a big retreat right now. And when it's over, we're all going to come out of it going, oh, my gosh, that's right. We love Jesus. Let's go out into the rest of the world and bring
yeah.
it back. At least that's my experience with retreats.
Well, and with every experience we have, it really comes down to how are you going to react to this and how are we going to live out our vocation and what God's calling us to do in the moment. So going back to what you said about obedience, I mean, the fourth commandment says honor your mother and your father. And part of that is having that respect and having that obedience for their decisions, even if we don't understand them and even if we don't agree with them. And there's a reason that we say Holy Mother Church. She is our mother, and she has that authority to make these decisions for us, whether we agree with them or not. I mean, I'm just thankful that I'm not in the difficult position of having to make the decision whether or not to cancel public masses in a diocese. That must be a really hard decision for our bishops. And I think it's okay even to disagree with that decision, but to do so respectfully and to do so with the right reasons and to do so with a heart of obedience, even in that disagreement, you know, to honor that decision, even if we disagree with it. Because like you said, what the bishops are telling us to do is not immoral. It's not like, you know, you have the right to disobey an immoral command from someone who has, you know, authority, who's abusing their authority. This is not an immoral command. We may not like it, but they have the authority to suspend those masses, like you said. And it's difficult. It really, really is difficult. So I think that you're right. It is important that, you know, we overcome some of that rebelliousness maybe inside of us, some of that pride that is telling us, you know, we know better than the bishops because we haven't been given that authority to make those decisions for the church, and they have. So, yeah, I think that obedience is a really good virtue for us to be practicing right now, and also to help us, you know, be more at peace with what's going on. I think holding on to that rebellious attitude kind of stirs up those unpleasant feelings inside of you. But if we can be a little more accepting, like, okay, this is where we are in the church right now, and then what is God calling me to do in light of our current situation? I want to throw out another virtue. How about forgiveness? I think that is one that we could practice right now.
We are all so bad at that.
It's really hard. It's really hard. Well, I was just recently thinking back to, like, when I was a teen and when I was a young adult. And you know how, like, you know better than your parents when you're a teen and you're a young adult? And you disagree. And I had that too. You know, I disagreed with, like, some of the decisions that my parents made, or some of the ways that they parented and certain things. And this is not to say, like, I know my mom is listening. Poor mom. This is not to say that, like, my parents did anything wrong or made wrong decisions, but, you know, me in my pride, I knew better. I would have done things this way or that way. And I was hurt. And I think that it's important when you find yourself in, like, this disagreement with authority, to be able to acknowledge that real hurt. Like, we are really actually hurting right now because we are so far removed from the sacraments. You know, we don't have access to the sacraments. And it's okay to acknowledge that hurt and that pain. So this is something, you know, that is done to us that is causing hurt. And I felt that same way, like, as a teen and young adult. There were certain decisions maybe that my parents made that I felt hurt by. So I had two choices. Either I could continue to hold a grudge against my parents for making a decision I disagreed with, or hold a grudge against my parents for making a decision that hurt me, or I could choose to actively forgive them and work on being understanding and merciful to them for particular things they did that I was hurt by. And so I was thinking about this and how being intentional about giving my parents that forgiveness, even while I disagreed with them, really has helped my relationship with my parents just blossom. Like, I am such close friends with my mom now, and I would not trade my friendship with her for anything. Like, I am so grateful for her friendship. But how did we get here? I think that it was by extending that mercy and forgiveness. And I mean, now looking back, I'm like, okay, I agree with this decision. I agree with that decision. Like, she was doing the right thing. I see it differently now, but in the moment, I had to choose to forgive even when I didn't understand. Okay, so applying that to our situation in the church, we might disagree with what's being going on right now with the hurt of being separated from the sacraments. We have to choose to forgive the hurt that's being done to us. Even if we look back later and we say, okay, you know, we agree that in the end the bishops did the right thing, whether or not we come to that conclusion, our relationship with the church is going to be better if we choose to forgive this hurt, for this hurt that we are experiencing. So I think that we would miss out on a lot of love, just like I would have missed out on a lot of love in the relationship with my parents if I had chosen to hold on to a grudge. I think we would miss out on a lot of love of being united with the body of Christ, with the church, you know, if we don't let ourselves forgive right now. And I think, you know, I think of my own parenting. Like, I want my kids, I know that I don't make all the right decisions. I make mistakes. You know, I hurt my kids by, you know, when I yell at them or I get upset with them. And I don't want them to hold a grudge either. So I want to model this ability to forgive, you know, these mistakes and things that come from our parents, first of all, by doing it with my own relationship with my parents, but secondly, to model that kind of forgiveness in the church and hope and pray that, you know, my children maybe learn the same thing, just to keep our relationship alive as they grow. Okay, so Tim, I think the next virtue we wanted to talk about was stewardship, how we can practice good stewardship in this time, especially of our resources. You know, while we're quarantined, we have limited resources, and one of them is, like, social media and digital media. And I think you wanted to talk about how we can practice stewardship within the church, you know, during this crisis. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I'm really hoping that many in the church, whether it be the pastors or the bishops or whomever, can use this opportunity to come to realize the power of modern media. And I think back, the last few days I've been thinking a lot about Fulton Sheen and how he's like, hey, look, we're using media to bring the sacraments to people as best as we can. You can't, you know, physically receive Jesus. You can't Skype in or FaceTime in for a reconciliation. But the fact that this modern media has been used now or is being used, I think Bishop Fulton Sheen is probably very happy about the use of that. And so I really hope that we can stream Mass more often.
Yes.
This is not to dissuade anyone from being physically present to receive the Eucharist, because obviously unless you have a valid reason to miss Sunday Mass, watching it on TV or YouTube or Facebook or whatever, that does not fill your Sunday obligation.
Yeah, that does not count. It does not count as Sunday Mass.
No, but if you think about all of the people who, you know, you're older, you're elderly, and you struggle to make it to Mass, or you're a young parent stuck at home with a sick kid, unable to make it to Mass that day because of your kid, how cool is it to be able to then engage in some way? And to be able to, especially for older people, to be able to see their own parish, not to see whoever happens to be broadcast nationally, although that's wonderful, but to be able to see your own local parish and not feel like you're missing out on that community that maybe you've been a part of for 50 years. So I think that that would be fantastic for churches to increase that, provide more access to the Mass via streaming and other whatever technical things. But also, for years I've heard the church saying, how are we going to get young people involved in the church? And especially with like young men, it's like, well, you want to join the Knights of Columbus and be the only one under 50? Like, I love the Knights of Columbus. I love them. Or would you like to be an usher? And it's like, okay, again, the only one under 60? Like, you know,
that's
kind of how it feels. So instead of trying to get young people to fit into roles that maybe God has not crafted them for at this time, get them to help set up and operate a system that can stream the Masses, or not just that, but, you know, the rosary, whatever we can pray, you know, different things. And then also have these young people go to the homes of parishioners and help them set it up. Because you get the 90-year-old woman who doesn't have a clue how to stream something on YouTube. And when she's told, and I've seen this happen, I've heard this from several people about their parents or grandparents in the last, you know, time of this crisis, where they're told, well, that's how we can access the Mass right now. And their response is basically, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Like, they don't have a clue because the technology is so far removed from what they've learned. That I think that would be a great service to parishioners, is to send young people to their houses and help them set up.
Yeah, so yeah. Give them a little desktop shortcut right on their home screen right there. Just click this, Grandma. Just click
it. Exactly.
Yes, yeah. No, that is a great idea. And I definitely, like, our parish is working on, you know, streaming talks and Masses for us. And one of the things I noticed, I was like, hey, how come that young kid gets to be there? You know, that he's one of like the senior altar servers or whatever, and I don't get to be there. And I was like, you know what? This is good, because he's in with the technology, the social media, like he knows exactly what he's doing. Like, this is a good role for him. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, getting the young kids involved in making this happen, because that's totally like speaking their language, this digital media generation.
And I think there are people who really are afraid that it'll be like, oh, well, then people will use that as an excuse to not go to Mass. I'm thinking about this. How much of YouTube and Facebook right now is, and, you know, Instagram or whatever, they're all flooded with streaming Masses. And how many people who are not Catholic are accidentally stumbling upon that right now?
Yeah,
I would bet a lot. Or people who are distant from the church, and they're like, I'm not going to take the time to go back. But all of a sudden, this is something that shows up on their screen. And maybe that's step one in bringing them back. That is fantastic outreach and evangelization. So instead of saying, well, this might cause people who are already not committed to leave, think about all the people we can reach out to and bring back. So I'm just, I've always been a big fan of let's, what can we do to go get people, meet people where they're at, and just a little glimpse that lets Jesus rush into their heart and gradually bring them back to the, I love that.
You're right. And where are they right now? The people are on social media. And even the Vatican is seeing, you know, the benefit in using the media to connect with, you know, to have the priests and the church connecting with the people, the Catholics, the parishioners. Because did you see that that apostolic exhortation that granted a plenary indulgence for participating, for uniting yourself to the sacrifice of the Mass or to the, you know, what's going on in the church through digital social media. So you can get a plenary indulgence by watching a streaming of the Mass online and then, you know, offering the prayers for the Pope, all the usual conditions of a plenary indulgence, and then intending to go receive the Eucharist and confession as soon as you can. And there's it listed a bunch of other devotions too. It said, you know, if you pray the rosary online, if you stream the Stations of the Cross online, and it just listed all of these things, and then it goes, and any other devotion. So basically, if you use any sort of devotion from social media, you can get a plenary indulgence. And I was just like, that was so good to me. Like, that was just amazing to see that just kind of mercy extended from the church using the media. Because like you said, you know, we got to use every means we can to connect with that source of grace. And that was pretty cool.
And it's so wonderful that so many people are praying together. We're utilizing the means we have to pray with people all over the world at the same time. And I've seen so many Catholics united essentially by this. And it's beautiful. People are crying out, I desire Jesus. I'm sad. You're sad. Let's pray together. And I think that's wonderful and beautiful.
Well, and what's going to increase our desire for the Mass and for the sacraments more? Is it just completely like ignoring all the streaming that's going on and going about like our normal whatever we're doing in our daily lives? Or seeking out all these opportunities and all these things that are being offered? Like, I find myself excited every morning to be like, oh, I know that, you know, this priest, this local priest I know is streaming Mass at this time. So I'm going to make sure that my schedule is clear and I'm able to, you know, unite myself to that Mass that's being streamed. Well, I feel like for me, at least personally, that's helping me increase my desire for the Mass to come back, to be able to finally get to Mass when all I can do is, you know, see a video of it online. So that's my take on that. I think we have one more virtue that we were looking at that we want to practice, the virtue of faith, living out our faith when we're, you know, separated from our faith community, our physical faith community. And I know we already talked about connecting digitally, but, you know, what ideas do you have for living out the faith and practicing the faith in our quarantined lives right now?
Well, I've seen a bunch of people, this is largely what we've talked about already, but I've seen a bunch of people engaging in, you know, masses via streaming and such. But I got to think about this moving forward, not just about right now, but moving forward.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I'd never heard of spiritual communion. And yet in the last few weeks, I found out that apparently St. Padre Pio and St. John Paul II were big fans of spiritual communion as a practice. And I thought, you know, if those two are big fans of something, the rest of us should be too. It's just that's how it works.
Yes.
That's how it should work. Those are two of the greatest saints of all time. And so, you know, I was told, you know, pray your act of contrition before you go to bed. There's Mass on TV. Yeah, because that's the kind of day I lived. I was told there's Mass on TV, and that's for people who are too old and couldn't physically make it. Eventually, I was told, well, yeah, you know, if you're sick also. But I had no idea that when we weren't present for the Eucharist, that we can make an act of spiritual communion. So I really hope that so many of us learning about this, that we will teach others, that we will teach our children, and that we can practice it. Because I've heard people.
Well, let me jump in there real quick, because you're telling me what you learned about spiritual communion. I was kind of aware of spiritual communion. I wasn't really devoted to making them. But here's something that I learned recently about making a spiritual communion. It's not just for when you can't get to the Eucharist. When you receive Jesus in the Eucharist, it's not supposed to be just a physical communion. It's supposed to be a physical and a spiritual communion. So we can and should be offering a spiritual communion as we're receiving physical communion. And I think a lot of times we're tempted, you know, the Mass is so familiar, we go through the motions and then we just receive the Eucharist kind of like out of habit, you know, we're distracted by our kids and whatever. And practicing receiving the spiritual communion without being able to receive the Eucharist is encouraging me to want to, unite my soul, my entire self, more closely to Christ when I'm receiving actual physical Eucharist during the Mass. And that was something that I hadn't really thought about in that way before. But I didn't mean to interrupt you, so you can go ahead.
Oh, you're fine. And, you know, recently, I'm sure a bunch of other people have seen this too, but social media has been flooded with pictures of people setting up little prayer areas with maybe a crucifix or some candles or a Bible, things in front of like their Mass TV or their Mass on their iPad or whatever. And I'm really hoping that this will encourage people moving forward to maintain and develop prayerful environments in the home, not just at the church, in the chapel, during Mass. When we return to the normal public Mass, I'm really hoping that people will say, you know what, yeah, let's make a habit of prayer, or let's increase our existing habit of prayer in the home, because we forget so often the domestic church. We need the Eucharist, but the church needs the family. Christ designed the family. We need God, or I should say God designed the family. We're here. We are the church. The church is not just a building. We are Christ's church. And so to raise up our children in that environment, to challenge the parishes and our fellow parishioners to really, I don't know, strengthen the community, whatever we can do.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we can have a reigniting of the power of the domestic church after this is all over and through all this.
Well, I love how you mentioned like a home prayer shrine. We have a home prayer shrine, and I got the idea from my mom. My mom has always had a home prayer shrine, like a whole room dedicated, you know, to this prayer space in her room, which I think is beautiful. Maybe we'd love to have a whole room someday, kind of like a chapel. But it really, seeing that example from my mom when we started our family really made me ask myself the question, what is the center of our lives? Is it this TV? Is it this screen? Do we want to put this front and center in our living room and arrange our entire living space around it? You know, all our couches set up to worship the golden TV on the wall? Or is prayer the center of our lives? And are we going to arrange our whole life, even our space around us, even our house, to center around these, you know, symbols and these reminders of our faith? So in our home, we don't have like a TV or a screen in our living area. And it was funny because we had some Franciscan friars come over recently, not during the quarantine, before this whole thing blew up, come over to our house for dinner. And it was funny because they were looking around and they were like, oh, do you guys live like us? We don't see any screens. It was like, no, we have screens. Like, we watch TV, but they have their place. Like, they're in, you know, a separate area. They're not like the main focus of our home. And I think that that's really important that we ask ourselves that question and we look at how we're arranging our physical space and our schedules and our lives. Like, what is it centered around? And to be more intentional about including those prayer spaces to help us be more intentional about prayer. Like, the physical things, they really do influence the spiritual things. So I think that you're right. We need to remember to pray, and we need to remember to enter more fully into our vocations during this trying time. That's something that I've been trying. You know, how can I love my husband better while he's working from home? Love my kids better, you know, while we have the fear, you know, we got the fear, the news, the screen time. Don't let that take over your life. Really enter into your vocation at this time. I think we are called to double down on living out that ordinary call to holiness that we all have, to enter into that redemptive suffering. Like you said, the agony in the garden, we have this cup, this cross that's placed in front of us, and we don't want it, but we can either reject it and then continue to live in that fear, fighting it, or we can embrace it. We can say to God, you know, not my will, but yours be done, and then seek what he's asking of us just in this moment, in this very moment. Don't get too far ahead of yourself and caught up in anxiety, but I think we need to look just in this moment at what our response is called to be, what God wants from us, and how to live as, you know, the good Catholics that he's calling us to be. So yeah, I hope that this episode was, you know, helpful, that we can all be encouraged to take our spiritual life more seriously right now so that we can continue to live out our Catholic faith in the good times and in the bad times.
And I just want to throw out real quick a couple of lines from the greatest story ever told. That's fiction. The greatest fictional story ever told.
There you go.
From Lord of the Rings. I wish it need not have happened in my time, said Frodo. So do I, said Gandalf. and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. So I know that this is a very difficult time for a lot of people, but all we can do is decide what to do with this time. Are we going to use this to strengthen our faith? Are we going to use this to strengthen our church, to strengthen our families, to strengthen our devotions? Or are we going to allow this to tear us down and collapse underneath the weight of it? Christ has already carried the cross for us, so the heaviest burden has been lifted. I want to challenge all of us, that includes me and Sarah, to really, really see this as a time to double down, as she said, to strengthen our faith, to strengthen our commitments, to shed what we don't need and see what we need, and to turn our sights to God and to the future of Holy Mother Church.
Amen.
I want to thank everybody for listening. If you could subscribe, comment, share us this podcast, follow us on social media, whatever you can do, we appreciate it. Sarah, where can people find you?
ToJesusSincerely.com is my website, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram at ToJesusSincerely.
And you can find me at ChasteLove.org and on social media at TheChasteLove. Now, you learn something from every difficult situation, and I've learned that three-year-olds were made for Mass at home, naked and shouting Disney songs. And remember, you're never alone.